It worried him that they were accepting his order so readily. It probably meant they were still in shock. If they were going to have to fight battle espers, fighting at anything less than full strength would get them all killed. It surprised Finley how much that mattered to him. They'd fought bravely. They didn't deserve to die.
Getting soft, thought Finley.
They pounded down the corridor, checking every opening as they passed, but there was no sign of anyone. Finley was pleasantly surprised to note that they were still more or less following the original route on the map. If they stuck with it, it should lead them right to Wormboy. Eventually. It worried him that they hadn't encountered more guards. They must have been withdrawn to keep them out of the way of the battle espers. They rounded a corner, and then the Stevie Blues skidded to a halt as Pindar shouted for them to stop. The party stumbled to a ragged halt, lifting guns and swords and glaring about them. Pindar stared straight ahead, frowning harshly. Finley moved in close beside him and kept his voice low.
What is it? What do you see?
It's what I don't see. There should be some background random mental noise, but there's nothing. Nothing at all.
Finley turned to the Stevie Blues.
Roast the corridor ahead till it glows.
Stevie One grinned.
My kind of plan! Right!
A roaring wave of flame swept down the corridor as they concentrated, scorching the walls on either side till they glowed crimson. And then the fire stopped, thrown back by an invisible barrier. An esper just behind Finley began to shake and shudder. People backed away from him as he convulsed. Blood gushed from his mouth and nose and ears. Finley grabbed the esper by the shoulders, but the violent shaking threw him off. Evangeline pulled him away. The esper exploded into a crimson mist that filled the corridor, spattering everyone with blood and worse. Finley aimed and fired his disruptor in one swift movement, and then watched incredulously as the energy beam ricocheted off an invisible screen.
Battle espers, said Pindar. Trained to perfection, conditioned beyond fear or weakness, programmed to fight to the death. Yours or theirs, the most powerful espers ever collected together, supposedly. You'd need disruptor cannon to break through one of their four screens, and even then you'd get better odds betting against the cannon.
I'm getting tired of you. You only ever tell me things I don't want to hear. Don't you have anything positive to suggest?
Yes. Get them before they get us.
He stepped forward to form a line with the other espers, and they stood silently together, staring down the corridor. A group of the battle espers suddenly appeared to face them, and for a long moment, all they did was stand there and stare at each other. A trickle of blood ran slowly down from Pindar's left nostril. Another of his group began to shiver uncontrollably. More of the rebel espers came forward to face the Imperial forces. The corridor floor wrenched itself apart, splitting open in a long, jagged line that shot toward the battle espers. It stopped several feet short. And that just left the Stevie Blues. They stepped forward in one simultaneous movement, brushed the hair out of their faces with the same hand, and frowned the same frown as they concentrated. Heat gathered on the air before them, savage and blistering. The walls on either side of them glowed a sullen red. The air shimmered. Beads of sweat ran down the Stevie Blues' faces, either from the heat or their concentration, and the angry blush on the steel walls began to move toward the battle espers. It got about halfway there, slowed to a crawl, and then inched to a halt, no matter how hard the Stevie Blues scowled. Finley looked around, but the only people left uninvolved in the silent esper duel were him and Evangeline. He reached over to one of the rebel espers, took the gun from his unresisting hand, and tried another shot at the Imperial espers. The energy beam faded out before it reached them, but it seemed to Finley that it got a lot closer than the last one. He reached out for another gun.
No! Energy weapons aren't the answer. They can control and absorb energy.
Then what do you suggest?
The two sides are pretty much deadlocked. The battle espers are so hyped up on drugs and mental implants they'd sooner die than surrender or back off. But with a bit of luck, that also means they're too involved with the struggle on a mental plane to defend themselves against a purely physical attack.
So what do you want me to do? Rush over there and bang their heads together?
I was thinking of something a little more... dramatic.
She fished in one of her pockets and pulled out a large, round object.
Shrapnel grenade. Simple, effective, and extremely nasty at close range.
She pressed the stud, knelt down, and rolled the grenade along the floor toward the battle espers. It seemed to move slower and slower all the time, but finally it got there. Finley grabbed Evangeline, pulled her down, and wrapped his body around hers as a shield. The explosion was deafening in the confined space, and shrapnel ricocheted off the steel walls, falling like jagged rain. An unfelt pressure in the corridor was suddenly gone, and Finley rose unsteadily to his feet. His ears were ringing, and his balance wasn't all that it might have been. He discovered a sharp metal fragment sticking out of his thigh, looked at it dispassionately, and pulled it out. The wound didn't bleed much. Evangeline stood up beside him, and he checked to make sure she was all right. She had a nasty cut on her forehead, dribbling blood down her face, but otherwise looked okay, except that she was glaring at him.
Will you stop grabbing me and pulling me around? I am quite capable of remembering to duck on my own, thank you.
Her voice sounded harsh, but far away, as though they were both underwater. Finley felt a grin tugging at the corners of his mouth, but controlled himself. He didn't think Evangeline was in the mood to see the funny side.
Where did the grenade come from?
Daddy always made sure that the female members of the family went around fully armed, after the iron bitch took my cousin to be a maid. I thought a gun was a bit obvious and too easily guarded against, so I decided on a grenade. But I suppose it shows I am my father's daughter after all.
Finley decided he wasn't going to pursue that point any further just at the moment, and moved among the slowly rousing espers, checking they were all right. They'd all been blown off their feet by the blast, but no one was actually dead. Several had nosebleeds or headaches, and they'd all been cut or pierced here and there by ricocheting shrapnel, but they were taking it well. Finley took a deep breath and moved slowly down the corridor to get a better look at what was left of the battle espers. He stopped quite a way short, rather than step in the blood and gore. A few of the mangled bodies were recognizable. Most weren't. He heard footsteps behind him and looked back, expecting Evangeline, but it was Stevie, too. He recognized the different colored ribbons in her hair. She looked at the carnage unflinchingly.
There, but for the grace of God, go I. My sisters and I were created specifically to be the new generation of battle espers. We got away, but we had to leave a lot of friends behind. I wonder, if I looked hard enough through this mess, would I find familiar faces?
Best not to look. Best not to know.
She nodded, turned away, and walked back to her sisters. Finley followed her back and rejoined Pindar and Evangeline.
All right, which way now? You can bet reinforcements are on the way, and I don't think we're up to facing down large numbers of battle espers again.
The plan hasn't changed. Find Wormboy, kill him, free the prisoners.
Just us?
Who else is there?
What about Jenny Psycho?
Evangeline frowned at Pindar.
What about her? We'll free her when we free the others.
I think we need her. The Underground arranged for her to be brought here for a reason. She's powerful. More powerful than even she knew. She was supposed to be the key to killing Worm Boy.
We don't have time for this, and we don't have time for her. Jenny Psycho will have to wait. It's a straight run to Worm Boy now. We've got to get him before the Empire can set up extra protection.
I think we can safely assume that happened the moment we breached Silo 9's defenses. And someone or something like Worm Boy isn't going to be easy to kill. I think we should take all the help we can get.
That's not why you want to free her. She's the one you saw in your vision. You swore your oath because of her. You see yourself as the hero rushing in to sweep her away to safety. You can't afford to let this get personal, Finley. They're all Jenny Psychos in here. They're all equally deserving. And the best way to save them is to kill the beast that holds them captive.
Finley frowned, thinking, and then turned to Pindar.
Can you contact her, mind to mind? Is she still open to us?
I don't see why not. In fact, at this range, I should be able to manage full contact.
He stared blankly ahead, reaching out with his mind, and his face brightened as he made contact.
Jenny, this is the Underground. We're here to rescue you.
And then Jenny Psycho came fully awake for the first time, and everything changed again. Her mind ignited like a flare, bright and blinding, almost too painful to look at. The espers in the corridor clapped their hands uselessly to their ears as her voice shook like thunder in their minds. Even Finley and Evangeline could hear her, as though she was right there in the corridor with them.
I remember. I remember who and what I am. Go to Wormboy. Destroy him. I will free the prisoners.
The godlike voice was suddenly gone from their heads, and the Esper slowly lowered their hands from their ears, looking at each other in shock. Telepathically deafened for the moment, they babbled at each other aloud. Finley tried to make sense of it, but all he could make out was a name, repeated over and over. Mater Mundi, Mother of the World. Once again, Finley turned to Pindar and Evangeline.
What the hell was that? This is something else you haven't got around to telling me about, isn't it? Who is she? Somebody talk to me!
Our mother of all souls. The most powerful telepath ever created. She founded the underground. No wonder no one was allowed to know who Jenny Sackle really was. Not even her. If the Iron Bitch knew she was here, she'd nuke the whole city just on the chance of getting her. If the mother wants us to go after Worm Boy, we are going after Worm Boy. You don't argue with God when she speaks to you directly. Not unless you want to be turned into a burning bush.
You think she's God?
Nearest local equivalent. Oh, my head feels like it's been scoured out with steel wool. She's not just a telepath, Finley. More like a force of nature. Let's go find Worm Boy. Which turning do we take?
Left,
said Stevie Three. It didn't take them long to get there, with the map burning in their brains like a grail. The corridors were eerily empty. There was no trace of the other battle espers anywhere, nor of any of the armed guards. The only sound in Silo 9 was their own boots thudding on the metal floors. And so on they went, along corridors and down stairways, sinking deeper and deeper into Worm Boy Hell. Until finally, they came to a huge, featureless wall, and there was nowhere else to go. Finley studied the map in his head, but it was definitely a dead end. Beyond the wall, there was just a great, empty space. And then he studied the map more carefully and frowned. For an empty hall, there were a hell of a lot of pipes and conduits and energy cables going in and out. And so he realized what he'd really known all along, but hadn't wanted to admit. They'd finally come to Worm Boy's lair.
All that space? Just for him? How big is he?
The word is they're going to have to build him a new home. He's getting too big for this one.
Finley decided he wasn't going to think about that for the moment.
All right. How do we get to him? What kind of defenses has he got?
He doesn't need any defenses. He's Worm Boy. There are no guards, no high-tech security systems. Just him. And that's enough. He's the strongest Esper the Empire Labs ever produced. A mind so advanced as to be beyond our comprehension. Vast, unknowable, and inhumanly powerful. And possibly quite insane.
You're just full of good news, aren't you? He can't really be that powerful, can he?
No one knows. No one's ever got this close to him before. And even allowing for Imperial hyperbole, he's got to be pretty damned amazing to run a prison the size of Silo 9. He has continuous mental contact with thousands of minds through his worms, and he knows what all of them are thinking at any given moment. Just another reason why no one has ever escaped from Worm Boy Hell.
This gets better all the time.
He hefted the gun and sword in his hands, but the familiar weights had lost all power to comfort him. He glared at the long, featureless steel wall before him, and it stared back, giving nothing away.
Anything will die if you hit it hard enough and long enough. How do we get to him? Is there a door somewhere?
No doors, no windows. Worm Boy isn't going anywhere. They built the hole around him and then sealed it shut. We'll have to break in.
Great. Got any more grenades up your sleeve?
You don't need a grenade. You've got us. Never met a wall that could keep us out. Right.
They moved forward to stand before the great steel wall and stared at it thoughtfully. The temperature in the corridor rose sharply, and Finley and the others backed away to a safe distance. The wall before the three Espers glowed a cheerful cherry red and began to steam. It got hotter and hotter in the corridor, and slender rivulets of melting metal ran down the wall. The heat before the Stevie Blues had to be unbearable. They stood their ground. They held each other's hands as sweat ran down their faces, and more molten metal ran down the wall. Finally, the metal collapsed inward like sticky toffee, and a hole appeared. A terrible stench entered the corridor of rotting flesh and waste products. The Stevie Blues pulled the same disgusted face and scowled even harder. The hole grew bigger, the metal running away like water. And everyone got their first glimpse of Worm Boy. Finley edged forward, one arm raised to protect his face from the heat, and stared in sick fascination at the endless stretch of luminous flesh, pierced here and there by pipes as thick as a normal man's arm. The wounds had healed around the pipes in rucks of crumpled flesh, encrusted by trickles of escaped waste. By peering up through the widening hole, now the size of a door, Finley could just make out one side of a vast, inhuman face. The skin was stretched inhumanly taut, so that normal expressions were impossible, but even as Finley watched, a slow smile spread across the lower face. The lips were almost black from the pressure of engorged blood, and the huge teeth were a dirty gray. The eyes were hidden in shadow, but Finley had no doubt that Worm Boy could see them. The Stevie Blues howled suddenly with pain and staggered back from the hole they'd made, gripping at their heads with both hands. It hit Finley and the others a moment later, and he cried out as the flesh rotted on his bones. The pain was horrendous, swamping his thoughts. His skin grew discolored and cracked apart, revealing maggots writhing in the decaying muscles. Pus and rotting tissue fell from his arms and legs. Somewhere in the back of his mind, he knew this wasn't real, but his body believed it. Worm Boy was playing his mind games again. Finley squeezed his rotting hands around his sword and gun, though he could no longer feel them. How could Worm Boy be doing this? There was no worm in his head, no access for the beast.
He doesn't need one. He's drawing on the collective power of all the Espers he controls. Our power is nothing compared to his now. Some of the prisoners are trying to hold back. They know why we're here, but he's too strong. Too strong. You're our only chance, Finley. It's harder for him to reach you because you're not an Esper. Kill him. Kill the beast. Before our bodies really believe what they're being told. And run for real. He's winning, Finley. He's killing us.
Finley could dimly hear distant screams from the surrounding Espers in their cells, goaded to action by the spur in their brains. They were killing their only hope, and they knew it. He almost lost track of himself in the vast sea of minds, but slowly, bit by bit, he curled in upon himself, shutting out everything else, drawing upon the ingrained disciplines of a fighter in the arena, where to lose concentration even for a moment could mean your death. He pulled back from the brink, but still he was helpless in the grip of such power. They were all helpless, alone in the dark with Worm Boy. And then, something wonderful happened. One of those minds exploded in a searing blast of light that threw back the darkness. One mind, pure and potent, reached out and gathered all the captive minds into its fold and pulled them together in a single vast cry of outrage. Once Jenny Psycho, now fully Mata Mundi, she gave them hope and strength and bound them in a single gestalt mind, fully the equal of the Empire's greatest Esper creation. But only the equal. Thousands of minds swept this way and that in the gestalt, torn between Mata Mundi's sheer power and the controlling worms hotwired directly into their brains. The prisoners were literally fighting themselves. Finley was there too, snatched up into the gestalt by the sheer power of what was happening. He could feel Evangeline there beside him, somehow always just out of reach. Worm Boy's power beat around him like the thunder of huge wings, grasping for him, but unable to make contact. He had no worm in his brain, and more importantly, he was not one man, one mind, but two. Even as Worm Boy's thoughts curled around Finley, pulling him in, the masked gladiator remained free, unnoticed, waiting. Finley plunged deep into Worm Boy's mind, seemingly just another small victory over Mater Mundi, another spark guttering in the darkness. But the moment Worm Boy clamped down on Finley Campbell, the masked gladiator was released. He sprang free, arrayed as always in his familiar armor and featureless steel helm, his sword Morgana in his hands. Worm Boy sensed something was wrong and tried to recoil, but he had already brought his killer deep into his own mind. The masked gladiator saw the single shining light in the middle of everything that was Worm Boy's private self, his inner being, his soul. And it seemed a very small thing indeed. It was the easiest thing in the world for the masked gladiator to step forward, take off his helm, and blow it out like a candle. Darkness slammed down as one boy died, and his last fading scream was drowned out by the roar of triumph as the prisoners of Silo 9 burst out of his grasp, free at last. Finley Campbell, complete again, watched them go, and then strolled casually out into the light to take his vows. Only when he dropped back into his own head, opened his eyes and looked around, he found himself in the middle of utter chaos. People were running everywhere, shouting and screaming, and the lights were flashing on and off. Evangeline was clinging to his arm, shouting in his ear, and Pindar was staring wildly about him. Finley shook his head and made himself concentrate on what Evangeline was trying to tell him.
Finley, we have to get out of here. The prisoners have all broken free and Mater Mundi is blasting a way out of the prison. The authorities have panicked and called in the Imperial Guards. Thousands of them are fighting it out with thousands of Vespers and clones. The guards are getting their ass kicked, but there's so many of them. They're everywhere. They'll be here soon. We have to get out of here, Finley, while we still can.
All right. I'm back. How many of us are there?
Just us three. The others are off fighting. The Stevie Blues are in their element. Half of Silo 9 must be burning by now.
So what's the problem? We'll just go back the way we came and get out under cover of the fighting.
You don't understand. They're bringing in S-blockers, hundreds of them. Our people will be helpless, unarmed. The guards will slaughter them.
Finley raised a hand to interrupt him and thought hard. They couldn't have come this far, achieved so much, just to fail now.
I've got an idea. I have an implant, a very tricky piece of quality tech that enables me to sneak past security systems without being noticed. We'll patch it into the prison systems via my comm implant, knock out the surveillance, and then everyone makes a run for it. A lot of people won't make it, but most should. It's not much of a plan, but it's the best chance we've got.
Do it. I'll pass the word to the others.
Pindar turned away, and both of them concentrated in their separate ways. Finley and Evangeline made it out. Pindar didn't. Gutshot by a guard he never saw. Finley killed the guard, but it didn't make any difference. They carried Pindar as far as they could, and left him where he died. They never did find Evangeline's friend, the one she'd gone in specially to look for. The Stevie Blues got out, riding a wall of flame. More than half the prisoners managed to escape in the end, streaming out under the unseeing eyes of the security cameras before the S-blockers could be deployed. But hundreds of Espers and clones died anyway, and more were captured. They were led away in restraints, neutered by the S-blockers. Many suicided rather than be taken again. The man who used to be called Hood walked unhurriedly through Silo 9's corridors, his cowl pushed well back to reveal himself as the Lord High Dram. There were bodies everywhere, and he had to step over and around them. Parts of the prison were still burning, and Worm Boy was dead. On the whole, he had to admit his operation to crush the underground had not been as successful as he'd hoped. But a great many Espers and clones were dead, and the guards had captured as many as had escaped. The underground's plan to break out all the prisoners had been foiled. The prison could be repaired, and they could always grow another Worm Boy. Eventually. More importantly, Mater Mundi had been forced to reveal herself, and the extent of her powers. And that was worth a great many dead guards. She'd find it a lot harder to find a bushel to hide her light under now. The underground would be scattered again, thanks to his knowledge of their inner workings. His people were already raiding the appropriate locations. It would take the underground years to recover and regroup. As Hood, he could identify many names and faces, including Finley Campbell, Evangeline Schreck, and Valentine Wolfe. Finley didn't matter anymore, but the other knowledge should give him great power over the Schrecks and the Wolves. They would be only too willing to bow to him to prevent their names becoming a scandal. Power like that was worth a lot. The Empress would take steps to see that this operation was regarded by everyone as a great success, playing up the gains and turning a blind eye to the losses. It should be more than enough to justify her making him her official consort. Graham smiled and smiled as he walked, and the guards gave him plenty of room, especially when he started to chuckle aloud. Deathstalker is a Defiance Audio production. Copyright 1995, Simon R. Green. Directed by Rick Rowan and produced in the studios of the Cutting Corporation. Production copyright 2002, Listen and Live Audio, Incorporated and the Cutting Corporation. The Deathstalker theme was composed and performed by Norman Vanderslice. If you enjoyed Deathstalker, you'll want to check out our futuristic warfare series, Battletech. And for our complete catalog, call 1-800-653-9400.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.